I just talk normal voice?
Yep.
Okay. Good morning. This is Susan Marshall with the State of Alaska Heating Assistance Program. I'd like to welcome everybody to the public hearing for the Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program, also known as LIHEAP. This public hearing is for our fiscal year 2016 block grant plan. This is the federal fiscal year that begins on October 1st of 2015 and will run through September 30th, 2016. This is the document that we use to apply for federal funding for Alaska's heating assistance program. The plan consists of sections outlining how we will administer the program and what we will be paying for benefits. The program uses a point system based upon the community an applicant lives in, how they heat their home, the total household gross income, the type of dwelling they live in, and whether or not a member of the vulnerable population, that's somebody who's elderly, disabled, or a household with a child under 6 years of age, live in that dwelling. All those factors impact their final eligibility amount. State statute number 47-25-623 instructs us how much to pay per point for benefits. And that actually relates to the average price of a barrel of North Slope crude during a particular period of time. The only real change to the plan this year as compared to last year is that we will be paying a lower amount. We're going to be paying $130 per point this year. And I'd now like to open up the floor to any comments and testimony. And Brian, I hear you're on the phone. Are there any other PAC members on the phone?
Nope. I'm on the phone.
Okay, Brian. Okay. Well, welcome. And the public hearing now will go on until 10 o'clock. Traditionally, we don't have a lot of public comment, so you may want to mute your line and multitask while you're sitting there, Brian.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. And yes, we are being recorded.
How much was it last year?
It was $150 per point.
Okay, so that's a $20 per point.
Yep, and I have here with me the actual document that I use to determine. I have to go back per statute and look at the price the previous September through this February, and I have those figures here to take a look at those and then take an average. And then statute reads that we will pay $130 a point when the average price is not more than $75 per barrel, $140 a point when the average price is more than 75 and not more than 100, and $150 a point with the average price is more than 100 and not more than $150 per barrel. So with the drop of the price in oil, it's impacted what we're going to be paying out for benefits.
And it sounds like they're predicting the oil prices to stay low or go lower. So is there a level below?
No.
Okay.
Nope, the $130 is the lowest that we have in statute at this point in time. And let me just go on to say that beginning this year, we did start collecting performance measure, our usage information for performance measures. And my hope is that after a year or two of collecting this data, I'll be able to show folks whether or not we really are paying the highest energy burden people the most amount of money and helping relieve their debt the most. That's the whole purpose of the LIHEAP statute, is to help defray costs for the highest energy burden households, those with the most vulnerable populations. And right now, using our point system, it's the best guess that we can have as to what people are actually using. But once we start collecting those actual costs, we'll be able to see what our benefits are paying and where we might need to alter that. I've been getting some of the vendor surveys back, and I spent a lot of time this week inputting some of the sheets. And one of the places had 54 sheets, and every 10 I was like, how many more do I have to go? And it amazes me. I knew that the price of electricity was high out in Bush, Alaska, but really looking at some of those bills, it's just phenomenal how high they are. And it'll be interesting because we're collecting electric as well as heating costs, so it'll be very true to what their actual energy expenses are as to how much we're paying of that.
The system that you're entering in isn't one that we would be able to have access to enter for you?
Right now, I'm entering on an Excel spreadsheet as they come in. So not right now. What had happened was we had proceeded with trying to get a vendor portal together to do this and do exactly what you're referring to. And because of the heating assistance software being older, the state did not approve a vendor portal on it. And we were slated to go into the new eligibility information system. That's now been postponed until 2017. So we are where we're at, basically. You know, prior to the new eligibility system, they were working on a web-based system that was going to have a vendor portal. It was 95% done, and they had to pull back resources to focus on the new eligibility system, which was for the whole Obamacare, Medicare. So they're still working on that program. There's been a number of bugs. They've kind of been pushing off when different programs will be included in that. I continue to push for a vendor portal in any way I can get one, but as I said to somebody the other day, it's on my work bucket list. And we'll see where that goes from there. With the new IRIS system, we do have a new accounting system now with the state. I've been told there's a vendor portal where vendors can get in and check accounts and things like that. My next step is to approach IRIS, but I want to wait until they've worked out all the bugs and they're still in that phase, which is why Trina's not with us today. She's training on IRIS. I'm hoping that by the time we have to collect data next year, we have an alternate to what we had this year, because extremely time-consuming for me, for the vendors. It's not a win-win situation for anybody. So that's my goal. And I did go out last night and buy a jump drive, and when we're back at the office, I will put that CSV on there for you.
And I actually have the data in Excel in my laptop, so it wouldn't be on your form, but it's already in Excel, so we could just copy that and give it to you, and it's already entered, and then I don't have to write it on the form, and then you re-enter it. It would
right.
already be there.
You have the number of months and everything?
Yeah, it's the time period that you accepted on the thing, but it's probably more than what you're looking for, but we can talk about that when we get back.
I actually have discovered through doing this, you know, I had gone out, and it was prior to you coming, Carol, but your predecessor, Andrea, I had met with, and I actually have gone out and talked to the vendors in the Anchorage area, the Fairbanks area, the Kenai area, the Valley, trying to get ideas as to the best way to collect this. And the spreadsheet actually came from Homer Electric, who sits on the Policy Advisory Committee, and NSTAR is another vendor, thank you, who sits on this committee, who actually helps me with that, and looking at the spreadsheet, also looking at the waiver language in the application. They had a lot of input on that so that we would, you know, the vendors would not be held liable for any information that they give us. I didn't get out to Bush, Alaska. That's where I was going with that. I'm sorry. I got this message, and, I didn't get out to Bush, Alaska. So one of the things that I'm finding is that some of the vendors at some of the stores are calling me going, oh, my God, do you want this data? We're going to have to go through all of our transactions. So I actually have a conference call next week in with some of the – good morning – some of the vendors out in Bush, Alaska, to see if we can – develop a methodology that'll work for them in their stores to collect this so it isn't as labor intensive, because there's one bookkeeper doing seven different stores, and that's quite a bit to have to go through. So it's still a work in progress. Performance measures in general are considered demonstration measures right now, so that we can all work out all the bugs that we're going through across the whole United States. We don't have a lot of problems here, or at least I don't think we do yet, but I know in the lower 48 they're having problems with propane vendors and getting information. Who would have thunk it? You know, I said, well, we don't have any problem with our deliverable people thing. We have so many, you know, I mean, you guys are the main ones, Delta, and then we have all the little guys that actually get fuel from you in the long run anyhow. So this is Nicole Etheridge, who is Nicole is the acting eligibility office manager. As I think I had explained on the phone to you yesterday, that Debbie James is now acting regional manager. Linda Dawson retired on July 31st. So,
yeah, she's actually kind of doing both of them. There's a bit of a change, but we're doing it together.
Okay.
She's quite busy, but yeah.
And
I'm Carol. Carol Jackson and Michelle Lindsay from Crowley.
Okay.
And we have on the phone with us Brian Hammond from Co-Arc, and I hear Vicki. Hi, Vicki. Vicki is on the line. Vicki Moyle from the Nanana Senior Center.
Hello.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Vicki, as I had said to Brian earlier, this is the public hearing portion of the meeting, and you know, we open this up for an hour and a half for the public to either come in person or on the phone to comment. They can call in from any of the legislative information offices, and this was advertised online, on Facebook. Notices were sent out to all of our vendors and our agencies. So you may want to mute your phone and multitask if we don't get a lot of telephone calls coming in, or you feel free to chat and say hi to us, but just to let you know that that's kind of how this first part runs.
Okay, thank you, Susan, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to sit in and comment.
You're welcome. So that's the folder for the PAC meeting.
Okay.
And you heard me tell Vicki this is pretty much what happens with the public hearing.
We're waiting for opportunities.
We're waiting for folks to call in or come in.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many people on average do you get when you do that?
Really? Us Americans are really not that involved in the things we could be involved in.
Well, you know, last year Pearl from Co-Arc came to our meeting instead of Bryant, and she had suggested using some of the agencies for outreach, and so I had sent stuff to Bryant and asked him to send it out to their villages. She also suggested Facebook, so I connected up with Clay Butcher, who's our communications person, and had him put this on Facebook. So we did go those extra steps to try to increase public participation. And it's not a bad thing. It never hurts to do those extras.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if we actually get any comments.
While we're waiting for someone to call in, just some questions in general. Is the programs open to anybody in any community throughout the entire state? Are there certain areas that would get something from TCC or ABCP instead?
Correct. The program is administered by the state of Alaska and 13 tribes across the state. And so if somebody lives in a tribal area, it depends upon whether the tribe has chosen to serve the whole community or just Alaska Natives and American Indians. And since you ladies are here, I will give you folders. This is for the meeting afterwards. Sorry, people on the phone. And you will notice if you open up this folder, on the left-hand side of the folder, there's a community listing. Keep going down. There you go. And this is your Bible to who serves whom across the state. Basically, if there is an asterisk, so if you look at like Akiak, there's an asterisk in front of Kana, that's Kodiak Area Native Association. That means that Kodiak Area Native Association serves Alaska Natives and American Indians, and the state of Alaska serves everybody else. If there's a zero in front of the tribal organization, it means they serve everybody in the community regardless of ethnicity. So it's really kind of broken down by who they told us they wanted to serve, and then we have memorandum of agreement with each of the tribes. We do share information with the tribes. So, for instance, if you look on, like, the community of Anchorage or Juneau, you'll notice that it's served by us and one of the tribal organizations. In the case of Anchorage, it's Cook Inlet Tribal Council, and in the case of Juneau, it's Tlingit Haida. What we have to do in those cases, if we receive an application that has an Alaska Native as well as a non-Alaska Native in the household, we need to contact Tlingit Haida, say in Juneau, to make sure that they have not served that household. We go by the head of household. So if there was a mixed couple, and in theory, the white person could apply with the state and the Native person could apply with Tlingit Haida, that would be double dipping, and we do need to double check with one another. And sometimes our vendors catch it. Sometimes our employees don't catch it, or sometimes, you know, the employee at the tribe doesn't call us. And so on occasion, our vendors have come to us and said, listen, this person got two grants, and then we, yeah.
Wow, this is cool. And so there often are people that are a member of a federally recognized tribe that live in one of the areas served by the tribe. They'll say that they are Alaska Native, but they don't have a blood quantum card and they aren't actually a member. So in the communities that serve, where the tribe serves just their members, there are times that somebody will say that they are, but they really don't have a historical way to prove that, and so then they're served by us too. So.
And I actually ran into a reverse, kind of an interesting situation this year. The rural areas a lot of times are able to get some additional funding through CIDCO. Are you familiar with CIDCO?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, on our application, we've added on our release that we can share our lists with the tribal organizations who administer that. And in a particular area of the state, I'm not going to use names or anything like that, but you know, I was asked to provide the list, and I did. And then they provided it to their vendors so the vendors would know who would be getting fuel. And one of the vendors called me directly and said, there's people in our community who are not on this list. And come to find out, on their heating assistance application, they listed themselves as other. And when I was asked to provide the list to the tribal organization, I was asked to provide for Alaska Natives. And it turned out that there's people in this particular community that don't want to be associated with a particular organization, so they put other on it. But in this case, it worked to their disadvantage, and the agency had to make the call as to how they were going to treat those individuals. So we go by what's on our applications because we're not there to actually see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. K&A closed their doors the other day. Are you in the loop on that?
Yes. The feds are investigating that at this point in time. I don't know if I'm supposed to be saying anything, but ENIAC, Traditional Council, has approached the federal government about taking over the community of ENIAC. AVCP is ready, willing, and able to take over the other communities. I had a conversation with the federal government, it'll be 2 weeks ago tomorrow, and they told me that there is a due process that they need to follow. It includes a letter, and then they have to wait 10 days, and then there's a second letter, and then they can decide to defund an agency. I emailed them yesterday to ask them if that first letter had gone out yet, and they said they're working on it. And I said, well, you need to be working a little faster. Because winter comes very quickly here in Alaska. So there's not much I can do about it except for to keep pushing from this end, because K&A got direct funding from the feds. Then it's got to be the feds that release that funding to another agency.
Do you happen to, or maybe later you could give me the contact at the feds that
sure.
we can talk to? Because they've we have some unfunded pledges.
I would be more than happy to do that. They want to know about that because that's come from another community as well.
Yeah.
So when we get back to my office, just remind me, and I'll be more than happy to give you that person's name and
number. Perfect.
Yeah. And we stopped funding them for the ACAP program last year. They did not get any ACAP money in FY 2015, which could be why there's some unfunded pledges out there, because they had to operate on strictly their LIHEAP funding this year. And what's to the advantages, for those of you who are listening on the phone, there's actually two programs that fund the heating assistance program here in Alaska. And one is the LIHEAP program, which is what this public hearing is all about. It's the federal block grant. The other one is the Alaska Affordable Heating Program. We fondly call it ACAP, kind of like AFLAC. it's meant for higher income individuals. LIHEAP is meant to go up to 150% of poverty, and ACAP is 151 to 225. One of the nice things is that, and it's funded through the general fund through the state legislature, ACAP is. One of the nice things is that we are allowed to use ACAP money to pay LIHEAP benefits. And that's a savior for us, because we don't get enough LIHEAP money to pay LIHEAP benefits at the point value that's established in statute. So that's why this year they didn't have that ACAP funding, and I'm sure that it impacted benefits in that area. But I will give you the contact information.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Great.
In fact, I think we only got two applications this year for the higher income program from them, right? And only one of them was complete?
From the tribe?
From KNA?
I think we got like four.
Okay.
But only two were actually followed through, and yeah.
Yeah, if you, the people who are on our policy advisory committee, and actually anybody who wanted it could have access to our annual statistics, but if you were to look at the stats that I pull together every year, you would see that the majority of the tribal money that's meant for the higher income families is going to supplement LIHEAP.
Yeah.
Well, while we're waiting for comments to come in, I'll read. I have gotten one comment in a letter format that I will read so that it will be on the record. And it was dated July 16th. It's from the Native Village of Shishmaref, the Shishmaref IRA Council. And it's regarding the LIHEAP plan. It says, "Dear Susan, the Native Village of Shishmaref Council held a rescheduled regular meeting on July 15th, 2015, and reviewed the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program block grant plan. The council had a discussion about the benefit computation and limited heating points and came to a conclusion they do not agree with the $130 per point for FY 2016 and will support the program to continue with the current amount at $150 per point. We have hundreds of tribal members that apply for this heating assistance that depend upon this program for heating their homes. The cost of living in rural Alaska is more expensive than living in the urban areas. So we are asking you to leave the points as it is at $150 per point. Thank you, and please take this letter in consideration. We're looking forward to hear back from you. Sincerely, Esther Iyatunguk, I-Y-A-T-U-N-G-U-K, the IRA Council Secretary." And I will respond to her afterwards and state that while I do understand that the costs of rural Alaska are high, we have to follow the statute, and I will include statute for her, as well as a copy of how I determined the price per barrel, so that she will understand why we are paying that.
And that is one of the quandaries with the price of fuel out in the villages, because like our pricing is based on the weighted average cost. So if a terminal has, and I think they've had some kind of, the state has done research on exactly how all of this is done, so it's, I think it's a public knowledge thing, but whatever fuel we have in the spring, when we go and put more in there from whatever price, the weighted average cost is recalculated at that time. So if at the time that we had to purchase the fuel so that we could get it, because, you know, we only have a short delivery window, even though the price per barrel may have gone down, the actual cost of the fuel that we have in the village may not have gone down that much. And I think on the price changes that I've seen, it's only gone down, you know, 10 cents from last year. So,
you're selling your reserve at the amount that you still have in reserve at the price that you paid for it when you got it.
No, we're averaging. We have, if we have, you know, 100,000 gallons at X, and then we put, and that's how much is left, there's a value to that, and then we buy another 100,000. So now we have 200,000 at whatever the average of the higher price and the lower price, say, because the price went down. So it doesn't, just because the price per barrel has dropped that much doesn't mean that the actual cost of the fuel, then the price, has reflected the same margin. Like, you know, like you'll see a huge drop in maybe the price per barrel, but the price out in the village hasn't changed that much. So, I don't know, I'm just putting that out there. It might be another factor to consider. And I don't, the calculation that you guys use, which actually looks kind of complicated.
It is.
Consider all of, now I'm like, oh, I can see why when you guys are processing that, you know, there's, it's not just like, oh yeah, here's one, off it goes. It, there's a lot more to it.
There is. And, you know, we've tried, we've reviewed our community heating points, which is the basis for our calculation. That's on those community listings you were seeing. Those are also, you'll see on the far right-hand side, you'll see the community heating points for each community.
Oh, okay.
You'll notice that they vary from community to community, and that was based upon Alaska Housing Finance Corp. ACWARM software from 1999. And we've reevaluated that several times over the last few years. And the way those points were determined way back then was they took the average price in a community and they divided by 100. And that's how many points they got. When we went to go do this a couple years ago, we had to divide by $375 in order to keep it under the 30. We're only allowed to have a maximum of 35 points. So to keep it under the 35-point limit, we had to divide by 375. That's showing you the difference of how much the price of fuel has gone up between that period of time and how, you know, this way of determining benefits is in statute and in regulation. I would support anyone who would like to recommend that there be changes made to that, because I personally feel as though there should be. And I'm, as I had said in the beginning, I'm kind of hoping that once we start looking at actual usage, we can then, you know, take that information, all that data, and say, okay, look, this is how we need to change the program to better serve our households. And we'll be looking at actual fuel costs then instead of a formula that takes a lot of things into consideration but is not looking at each individual circumstance.
Mm-hmm. So there are people that have very weatherized homes that don't use very much, and then you've got the ones that don't have that, you know, and we, of course, refer them to weatherization and stuff, but it can be a big discrepancy.
Yeah,
that, you know.
Yeah, Nicole's group sees it a lot in that, you know, they're in operations. I sit a 15-minute drive from where they do, and I'll sometimes get emails from one of the eligibility checks going, how can this be? You know, blah, 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 blah. They'll see something that doesn't look right based upon the calculation, and I save those and say, yes, I do understand, and we're, you know, trying to get some meat to make some changes. But right now...
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it's on the right track, though, just gathering as much as, you know, it's kind of, well, fortunately we have people for that that are query savvy and can, you know, get to the database, because our system doesn't have a canned report, which you'd think it would, but that's another story. So I think it's really good to be able to collect that data and compare and see where the gaps might be. Mm-hmm. So,
but on the other hand, you know, the point system, you know, when you think about Shishmaref and how expensive it is and the fuel maybe is sitting in there, you know, they've got 29 points for their community. So it does work in a way, because you've got, you know, it's taken into consideration, and so they end up having more points typically than somebody who lives in Juneau or a place where
they
have access to it. So, and each point, you know, is $130 this year, huh? Yeah. So the grants are higher. For now, it works.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it does help people who are in colder areas get more money.
I have questions about the $200 that they need to
have.
So you love the $200 thing. Let's do it.
So federal statute says we're supposed to be helping the most needy people. And prior to me coming on to board here, in the state of Alaska, that translated into somebody has to have at least $200 a year in out-of-pocket heating costs. Because if you don't have at least $200, then, you know, chances are it's not too much of a burden on your household. Once again, we're trying to look at high energy burden and the burden to a household. So that's where the $200 came from. And we need to show, we were audited a couple years ago from the feds, and we need to show, which is why we need to collect some kind of invoice, that they have in fact spent $200 out of pocket for fuel. It could be their heating assistance money, but where it can't be is in a subsidized a subsidy. So if somebody's living in subsidized housing, like AHFC housing, they, as part of their rent, they get a worksheet, and on that worksheet there's an allowance for utilities. So that's where that's the one time we need to take a look at, okay, what was their actual bill, what was their utility allowance, and did they pay $200 out of pocket, whether it came in the form of energy assistance or something else, but was their $200 out of pocket more so than what they were already getting in their rent?
So an example of that is that their utility allowance for oil, because they pay for their own heat, is $300 a month. So we take $300 a month that they're getting off of their rent directly. Had they not gotten the utility allowance, their rent would be higher. So they're getting a $300 break, and it's coming in the direct form of this utility allowance. You times that by 12, and we come up with a yearly amount. They have to show that they've exceeded that yearly amount in their actual spending of beyond that $200. There has been a lot of confusion about the $200 out-of-pocket just in general, and the general public who maybe aren't in subsidized housing. And for oil, when somebody lives in Alaska and they use oil to heat their home and they're not subsidized, we can assume that they will spend $200 as long as we have a receipt. So if they provide us with a receipt that shows that they purchased $75 in oil, well, we know that is enough to determine that they will be spending $200.
Yeah,
so it's not that we're making them provide us with $200 in receipts, but most often, 90% of the time, you have $200. You have their history,
right?
Because they are spending more than that to heat their home.
I wasn't aware that it could be used with grant money.
Well, that's what I was thinking when you say out of pocket, I'm thinking their pocket, not state pocket, because really that was the state's money and not theirs, because we can't give it back to them.
Right.
We'd have to give it back to you.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Okay.
And
the burden's not them to provide that, not us, right?
They need to get it from you.
They need to get it
from you.
Okay,
well,
and they need it from you one way or another. But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we provide that when we deliver, so that's...
We were running into something a couple of seasons ago with wood. People were running down to the little Tesoro station and buying a little bundle of wood and giving us a receipt and telling us that they were, you know, heating with wood and that was their vendor. And those individuals, we did say, we need to have $200 in receipts to show you've bought $200 worth of wood.
Because you've got self-harvest as well, which is a completely different grant. So if they're self-harvesting and they aren't really paying, you know, much.
But they
bought one bundle.
But they bought unleaded fuel, because we have this in places like Antioch and you know, I think McGrath and...
You get it in Glen Ellen,
and a few other places where they want to use energy assistance from ABCP or TCC to put unlead in their snow machine or four wheeler to go harvest wood, which
mm-hmm.
you know we don't know where they're really going. I mean, I'm assuming they're going where they say they are, but there's always the exceptions by community of where they can actually purchase unlead.
We send grants for a self-harvest households, a lot of them will ask that their grant be sent to a vendor so that they can purchase their gasoline for their
right there, yeah.
So they, you know, the self-harvest folks, we can send them a direct pay, a check to them. But some of them do ask, and especially when they have bigger grants, we kind of, you know, they, we like it when it goes to a vendor and they can use that for their snow machines, their chainsaw, all that.
But our notice of action will say that it's for self-harvest wood.
Okay.
So that a vendor will know that this is a self-harvest person and they can give them that fuel, because otherwise they're not supposed to be getting fuel. We don't do secondary harvesting of wood or anything. So it says right on the notice of action. So that
I don't think we've never seen them. Not from the state. We typically, what will happen is somebody will show up at one of our terminals, and then we'll call TCC or ABCP and say, so-and-so's here, they want to use this for unlead, and have them say yes or no, because they know more about the individual than we do. In regards to, I want to say this was a couple years ago, they were talking about redoing how they do the funding, and they were talking about certificates to the vendors. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, when the legislature, that was a legislative thing. That was not heating assistance. That was the legislature who was coming up with their own little thing that they were going to do with sending people certificates for fuel, and it passed one house, and it didn't pass the other one. And
so it's gone?
It's gone, yeah. That's gone.
Yeah.
Okay. That was also going to be difficult for us, because then it was going to be, well, how does that impact their out-of-pocket and
right.
their heating assistance? So, yeah.
And if you have some going to the NSTAR bill and some to the heating oil bill, and how do you know how much is left? And yeah, I was really racking my brain trying to figure out how we would do that. So that's good to know. Okay. So the plan is to continue how we've been doing it, which this year I think works really well.
Yep.
We're pretty happy.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Well, we've got our Trina, so.
Yes.
Who you will meet later.
Yes, dying to meet her.
Nicole, Trina wanted to meet these ladies, but she was in training today.
Yeah.
So we are going to get together at TJ McGuire's after work. If you, I know that you have a family, but I just wanted to.
Yeah,
you know.
She said, are you joining us for cocktails? I said, I don't know if I'm gonna. That's right next to my house. I don't know.
Okay.
I've got to pick my son up after, and I didn't really plan on that. So if I can, I will stop in there.
Okay. This just kind of came together yesterday. It was last minute, so.
Yeah.
I'd emailed Debbie, but she's not going to be able to join us. She has a bed and breakfast, and she has someone checking in at 5:30.
Oh.
Oh,
what's the name of that?
A there, then, in.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. Keep that in mind for next trip.
So.
By teaching the choir, I'm thinking of the wrong. I'm thinking of G.W. Teal.
Yeah,
you
think
thinking
of Prospector.
You're a Prospector. Okay.
Yeah, I was, when you said that, I'm thinking, where she live near there?
I
don't
know
what
I'm like.
Okay.
I still haven't got all the lingo down. I've only been here 7 years.
I've only been
keep
here
moving
things.
September of 2007 is when I moved here.
Oh, okay.
Seven
you've
years.
Been here almost
8 years. Okay.
Where
gosh, time flies. Ketchikan.
Oh.
You guys are in Ketchikan now.
Mm-hmm.
Would you buy Andrews?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They bought Taku also in Juneau.
Wow.
You've been over to their terminal this week.
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday.
Yeah. I've been there several. Well, this is her first trip to Juneau.
Yeah.
So we went
ever.
Looked at Douglas Depot and took her out to our fleet car lock out by Lemon Creek and spent some time in the terminal, and we'll be back there this afternoon.
Where is the Crowley terminal? Where's that? Is it down by AML?
It's right. You know where Delta Western is?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's right next to that.
It's the white tanks in front of the green one.
I never make it over that far, but yeah.
Okay.
Rockdale.
Okay.
Yeah, Rockdale. Know where that is. Wow. Yeah, Crowley's just expanding.
Yeah. Well, and then we bought Jackson last November. For
Keenan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows what's on the horizon?
You know, I used to work for Ten Chiefs. And I used to do their heating assistance program back when Dick Kroll was there.
Oh, wow.
And it was Yukon Fuel, and before that it was I think it was UConn, then it was Crowley, and then it went to CB. But anyhow, a long, long time. And Crowley's always been very good to work with as far as heating assistance is concerned. You guys have been fabulous about helping folks out and going out and putting in that emergency fuel and working with us, both when I was at TCC as well as the state. And really do appreciate that cooperation because it makes our lives so much easier when we have vendors who have a big heart and are willing to work with us. So thank you.
We want to make sure that customers are taken care of.
Yeah, we don't want people to freeze.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
I was actually just coming on when Dick was retiring.
Really? Yeah,
mm-hmm.
He must have left right.
About
I mean,
6 months
I have
before,
heard
you know.
The name a million times.
Yeah, he was just, I actually started on his last day.
Every year. Dan Owen, did you know Dan Owen?
No. No, I dealt primarily with Dick. In fact, when I moved from Fairbanks to Juneau, my last day, I was cleaning my carpet and I fell and I shattered my leg.
Oh.
And I ended up leaving Fairbanks in an ambulance.
Oh,
and I went from the Fairbanks Hospital to Providence and Anchorage for rehab. And Dick came to visit me in the hospital. And it was funny because he said, I heard your voice. I said, and I heard yours. You know, we'd never met each other before. And it was just so nice that he went out of his way to come say hi and to meet me. And
those are the times that are amazing. You just don't forget people like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, we have a lot of good people at Crowley. That's good to know.
Are you guys in Anchorage?
Mm-hmm. We are.
Okay. You're like in the administrative office.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, our corporate office is in Jacksonville, Florida, because we're a huge, huge company.
Oh,
I mean, we do liner services all over the Caribbean and tug assists up and down the West Coast. And we have the Costa Concordia, that ship that was Titan is owned by Crowley, and they're the ones that raised that, uprighted the
cruise ship in Italy. Yeah.
And we've got Australia. I mean, we're all over the world. Yeah, it's a huge, huge company. So our fuel thing is like one division.
It's just our little hand.
Is fuel just in Alaska, though? Is Crowley doing fuel other than barging it up and tugs and stuff like that? Are they actually in the fuel business down in the lower 48, too?
There is a fuel thing, but I think it's mainly just the tankering
right.
fuel from there to there. Right. Not like we don't have terminals in other states.
God, we do.
Yeah. I don't think you see a lot of that anymore. I just don't see a lot of the little trucks moving around fuel down. And,
I don't know.
Yeah, I know a lot of them are just moving more to natural gas. I know on the East Coast, where we're from, you just don't see a lot of the fuel trucks like you see up here.
Yeah. Well, if you get further into New England, you can. Like, I know that New Hampshire and Vermont still have a lot of fuel.
Okay.
Massachusetts and actually Connecticut. I've recently gotten some information showing who were the high fuel states as far as deliverables and particularly oil. And if you're looking at, you know, the New England states, not so much New York.
Yeah, we've kind of phased that out over the years.
Pennsylvania was up there a little bit. And then, Alaska. Pretty much no one else on the West Coast.
Yeah, you just don't.
You know, Pennsylvania was I believe that's where they found oil first. Pennsylvania.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. There's this there's like the 50 states, how they got their shapes and whatever, you know, series.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I was watching that and yeah, I think it was Pennsylvania was the first place. I was like, Pennsylvania?
Wow.
Yeah. Well, facts there.
Cool. We deliver fuel all the way up to Prudhoe Bay.
Mm-hmm.
When that ice window just opens up and we get in and get out.
You go to Nome too then?
Oh yeah, we have terminal in Nome.
Yep.
Yeah, I think we Kuwait, because we work with them for energy assistance in Nome.
Nope, you probably work with us. Kuwait might give out heating assistance as well.
Yeah, they do.
We cover Nome. So.
Yeah.
Is there anybody on the phone other than Vicki and Brian? Okay. Just double checking. So just so you ladies know that when I submit my plan to the feds, I offer them a disc of this so that they can see that we really did hold a public hearing and that this is what transpired while we were there. So just so you know.
Cool.
You'll hear all of our little chitter chatter.
Just tell them some jokes so that they can enjoy it. Clean jokes.
Yesterday on the plane, on the way down, there was a guy, and this just still like going, okay. There was a guy sitting there, and he had a rubber horse mask that he would put on periodically on the plane, which in some aspects I'm like, air marshal somewhere?
Yeah.
Because that seems like you don't walk into a bank
with a mask.
Right.
It seems like you wouldn't be on a plane with a mask, so it was a little strange. But anyway, so I asked him why the long face. There's our joke.
Horse walks into a bar and the bartender.
Yeah, it's the only joke I can remember. So people look at me like, I don't get it.
I don't.
You and me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. My son told me that joke.
Yeah. Nice and clean.
Yeah.
She loves horses. I'm just kind of like, I saw him put it on. And I mean, he's got a whole plane full of people on this big, long horse face. And I'm like, Carol, look at you.
Can I wear that?
I actually have one.
I have the same one
at home. And I would never have thought to bring it on an airplane. But
did you tell him that?
Yeah, I did, but I don't think he heard
me.
Said
his response was, I have more.
Yeah. And that really scared me, too.
I'm like, weird.
Yeah.
I've seen too many horror movies with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I'm still just a little puzzled, but hopefully he won't be on the plane on the way back.
I didn't ask him whether there was a group of them. There's like a whole group. And they said that they build ports and do dock work. And
yeah, because he said his crane operator used to work for Crowley, because we do all kinds of stuff. We have crane operators and
we have our hands on a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
I did not realize you were that big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My ex-husband's worked for Petromarine for 15 years.
So,
in Ketchikan, I thought they were really big, but coming up here and then working for heating assistants, it's like, whoa.
I think one of our VPs didn't Bob Cox work for Petromarine?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Small.
Is he in Anchorage or?
My ex?
Mm-hmm.
He's actually here in Juneau. Moving back to Ketchikan here pretty soon.
I was there for a little while, too.
At Petro?
On the short side.
Oh,
But they're kind of merging the businesses.
Petro 49 now.
Yeah, they're merging the businesses together, so it's father and son merging together. And they actually bought the old Carlisle building downtown across from First and Sitka, and they're renovating that.
Did they move out?
Carlisle?
They went to Seattle. That's right.
So they're moving in that building together. So I think they're getting rid of the 64th location, which was just remodeled like a year ago. It's gorgeous. So they're all moving in together. So I wasn't sure who was coming from outside and moving to town. They just want everybody together.
Anything that's going on with that anymore. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought they were big. And now...
Yeah,
it's really big.
Yeah,
go to Crowley.com
and you'll be like, whoa.
Yeah, they're very small compared to Crowley.
We're just one itty bitty little piece.
Well, you're big to us.
We're big for Alaska, but you know, that state that is down there by Hawaii.
You make a difference to us.
The state smaller than Texas?
Yeah.
Don't tell Texas we're bigger than them.
I know, there's an article, I didn't read it, in the Fairbanks paper last weekend, still sitting in my backpack. I was up for the fair, Fairbanks for the rodeo on the fair last weekend, and about the number of Texans living in Alaska and how
getting a little draw.
I was reading that article.
Okay, mm-hmm. So you read it, all right.
Yeah, I was very surprised. It kind of caught me off guard.
Yeah, who was it that says y'all at work that's not from Texas?
Belinda.
Oh, I think there's someone else. It's funny. I lived in Texas for a year and a half. Alaska's a good place.
It's a lot cooler.
Too hot, too many bugs, too many snakes.
Yeah,
too many locusts, too many armadillos.
I do miss falling asleep to the crickets though on the East Coast.
Yeah.
The sound of the crickets and then the thunder and lightning. I'm always hoping for a good thunder and lightning storm when I go back, so... And they're usually pretty good in September, so I'm hoping to hit one. My kids, on the other hand, don't know what they are. They really freak out.
That's, you get used to things where you're raised, that's for sure. Love it when it's been raining here. The other day when it pours really, I'm just like, okay, catch a can, which is my hometown. And when I lived down in Oregon, I would just wait for that rain to come like that because it rains constantly in Ketchikan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I miss that. And it thunders and lightning's there and the lights go out.
Is it really?
All the time.
In Ketchikan?
Oh, yes.
Oh, wow.
You get a lot of wind, too, don't you? It's windy and stormy and lightning and thunder. And I mean, there's the famous photo that was taken where there was like 20 different lightnings coming down.
Oh, my goodness.
My house. But yeah, we don't get that here. I've only seen lightning or heard thunder here twice in the 8 years I've been here.
We don't get it in Anchorage at all, and I've been there 23 years, and I can count on one hand how many times. I've never seen lightning, but I've heard thunder because I had to question it.
Yeah,
like, was that thunder or was that
far right?
A car going over the bridge?
Yeah.
So we just don't get it at all. So people in Anchorage are like, what's thunder and lightning?
Fairbanks gets it. When I lived in Fairbanks, we got it.
Well, they get that cold front and
lightning. It's a lot warmer up there.
Mm-hmm.
Too. That's why Ketchikan gets it, because it's on Revillagigedo, and so on the side that Ketchikan's on, all the clouds that are coming in, that's why it rains so much. They have to drop all of their rain to get over the mountain when they're headed inward. So that side of the island just gets tons of rain, and so they get trapped in there, and then you've got the cold and the warm.
So it rains a lot, then?
I think the Ketchikan rains more than, I think it's the, it's like 25 feet a year.
Wow.
And I believe that it rains there more than anywhere else in the Northwest Hemisphere, I want to say.
Wow.
Which I could not deal with that.
I think that Kauai is one ahead of it or something.
Yeah.
The top rain.
We went to Kauai in April, and it rained every day.
But barely. I went there a couple summers ago. And
yeah. And it would come and go.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be torrential, and then it would stop. And then it would be sunny again.
What month did you go again?
It was
April
or March? April.
There.
Yeah. We were with my in-laws.
I went the first week of April. And, yeah, it definitely rained. It was so crazy that it was raining so much at the Princeville. But then if you go down to Poipu, it was all dry.
Yeah.
I mean,
stayed in Princeville, too.
I did, yeah. I'm glad I did, too. I liked it. I found an amazing condo for $95 a night.
Wow.
It slept six, had two bathrooms.
We were at the Valley High.
That makes it
nice. At the Valley High, were you?
No.
That would have been funny. You look familiar. Oh, yeah. I thought you had a pool.
No, I was at, I can't remember the name of it, but it's right next to that big fancy hotel up there. I can't remember.
I know which one you mean.
Yeah, that was at like the dead end.
Yeah, yeah.
And you went down there and the drinks were like $20 a drink.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
We were right next to it. And, yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, we were just up the street. From like you drove right by where we were.
Yeah. What do you think about those trees? The eucalyptus trees.
Yeah, those are pretty cool.
I just like Dr. Seuss, which is weird.
Frogs everywhere, yeah.
So they were painted trees, and they're like green and red, and the bark, and yeah.
Hmm.
We caught frogs. We had fun. I wanted to move there.
We saw whales out off in the distance. We couldn't get to the beach where we were, but it was okay.
I was hearing on the news this morning there's a whale out there off the coast of Juneau that's tangled up in netting that they're trying to.
Oh,
is it still out there?
Really?
Javon?
I'm going out this weekend derby fishing.
Ah.
Everyone's talking about the derby.
Everybody.
I don't think anyone's going to be in our office tomorrow.
No, I'm just wondering.
Well, you know what? Then you know what that means, ladies. When in Juneau, do as the Junoites do. You just got to get somebody to take you out in their boat with them, and you conduct business out on the Sound.
Oh, there you go.
Or the channel, or wherever you're going, instead of.
There you go.
I brought my fishing license. I want to go out to the
shrine, you said, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. How far is that? There's a shrine that
20 minutes. Out the road from the valley. Yeah, it's probably like 40 from here, 30 or 40. Yeah. It's pretty neat. It's kind of creepy.
A shrine
for, well, it's where they buried all the babies out there.
Okay, well, maybe not.
I didn't know that. I go and bring people out there all the time.
Yeah, I go there too. I like that little
shrine.
I'm not sure, but people go, oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
It is beautiful, and you should
go. It's a little church. It's out on what would be an island if you didn't have the walk path out to it. It's gorgeous. It's really just very scenic and beautiful. But, you know, you'll see signs about, that's where all the whole dead baby thing and the abortions come from. Okay.
Yeah. If you go past the maze and everything and you take the little walkway out to that island, that's where they, that, and yeah, but it's really pretty. And, you know, I just didn't know that when I went out there. So I was like, oh, where are the babies?
Okay. Hmm.
Yeah, there's a little thing there you can read about it, and there's stop points along the
there's
way.
There's 7 different stations of the cross.
Cool.
So
yeah.
It's very pretty. And like she said, there's a maze there. Then next door, there's the Arboretum, which I've never been to.
I haven't either.
But
that sounds nice.
An Arboretum out there, too. The other thing is with the shrine, it's on the left-hand side of the road, and you just kind of got to look for the sign, and it you just kind of got to be aware. Because I went to go take somebody out there last spring. And it was late. It was after work. Yeah, we passed it.
At the end of the road.
Well, I'm like, all right, I'm not quite sure where we passed it, you know, and because
yeah.
We just couldn't see it. So you won't have that problem now with daylight, but I had it.
Have you guys gone over to Treadwell over there in the by Sandy Beach in Douglas? That's my favorite place. I love that.
Treadwell. No,
it's
we
the old the mine that collapsed. And, you know, had the hole, and it collapsed, and everybody died. And it's got all the buildings. 1900, early 1900s.
So how do you get there?
You go over to Douglas. Go like you're going to go to Petra Marine. Go across the bridge there and take a left and go into downtown Douglas. And you just follow the road all the way down to Sandy Beach. It's pretty much the end. I think there's a sign that says Sandy Beach.
Okay.
Just park right down there. There's a trail, and it has all the information. It's got boards all the way along the way that talk about it.
I want to do that. I haven't done it yet.
I just did it the other day, and they have improved the signs. Now you have the whole history. It tells what menus the miners ate. Back there used to be a swimming pool there that collapsed. The dining hall collapsed and went into the ocean. Luckily, like, no one was in the dining hall for some weird reason when it happened. Yeah, there's the old hospital there and the old administrative building that you can look in. I mean, all the buildings are still there.
Wow.
And the vault where they kept the gold is still there. You can walk inside of it. There's also...
Oh, you can do that.
Yeah.
It's
we have got to plan our day.
Do we need to expand? Like, sorry,
what
we won't be
do
back
we need to cover in the office? Yeah.
Just one more day. Why didn't
you
think about that?
I didn't realize that there were still buildings that were up. I thought there were just foundations that were left.
Well, you can't get to the second floor. They were all cement. They made all those buildings out of cement, so they're still they're just shells, you know, of a building. But it's just to go in there and imagine when you look at the pictures that this was a whole city.
Wow.
It was a city, and now
I didn't even know there was a gold mine here.
There's two.
AJ is the other one across downtown. They talk about reopening that one, but that collapsed too, right? Or fire.
No, they shut that one down during the war. Second World War.
And there was a fire, too.
The fire was over in Douglas.
Oh, really?
Yeah, first they had the collapse in Douglas, and then they had the fire.
Oh.
AJ was just shut down because of the war, and they were having talks about reopening it, but they, right now it has to do with the water supply, because the water supply that the mine uses is also our main water supply.
Yeah.
So they were going to have to find an alternate in case, you know.
So down where the rock dump is, all of that are mine tailings.
Right.
That's what it's all from that mine
there. Okay. I think I didn't realize it was mine. I knew it was from, they took it from one place and dumped it there to expand the ports or something, but I didn't realize it was.
It was from the mine, and that's the same thing, Sandy Beach over there in Douglas and stuff.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I was reading that that was all crushed rock. That's how they made that beach.
That's,
and that house that they put their new roof on, it's the pump house out there. Out in the water at Sandy Beach.
Oh, the old one?
Yeah, that was actually used to pump the sand onto the beach.
Yeah, because they were pumping because they had to do something with all of their stuff.
Yeah.
So they were, that's how all those
were. Wow.
Yeah.
So the AJ, where's that?
Downtown.
Yeah, Mount Roberts.
Right next to the tram that goes up.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually, if you drive and you look, you can see some of the old buildings right there as you're headed out towards Thane.
Uh-huh.
And you can see the levels and... Yeah.
And if you're actually over in Douglas, not this time of year because the trees cover it up, but in the other times of year, you can actually see, to me it looks like cave dwellings where the mine is.
Oh,
do you know what I'm talking about on the side of the mountain?
I'd like to see that, though. I heard that there, someone just told me the other day that there is actually a tunnel in that AJ mine that actually goes all the way through the mountain to the other side.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you can't go in it, but, you know, everything is shut down, but that it actually goes all the way through.
Wow.
Yeah,
other than
how big it was.
That would be a cool
thing. Oh, I know,
like
right?
That one of those Survivor celebrity shows or something.
Yeah, Juno has a lot of history to it, which I'm just now learning. I love old things. Like
yeah, we
that.
Do too.
Yeah, and
notice that just walking around here, though, just kind of like from the sidewalk to the building.
The architecture.
It's just beautiful. It really is. Nightlife can be a little concerning, though.
Yeah. Yeah, we were going to go to the rookery for dinner, and we got there. Well, it was we had gone on our little tour. We went out to the glacier, and
mm-hmm.
then we went to the card lock after we went to Douglas Depot to show her all of that stuff. And then by the time we got back and parked and walked up there, it was maybe 7.
Yeah.
And it was totally full, and so it's like, okay, guess we won't be eating there. And then the nightlife was getting a little
interesting
on a Wednesday.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
We're down at Gold Belt.
Huh?
They're staying at the Gold Belt.
Okay. Well, this was like in front of the Baranoff, and just the
there's a lot of
drunk people who were out, and
they're always there.
Yeah.
Well, it was funny because we
weren't there early this morning.
Oh, no. Sometimes they are.
Oh.
Sometimes they are.
Somebody really wanted a lighter that was sitting on the bench outside of the pharmacy store.
Well,
the little.
I was.
I'm going
like,
to call it like a little Walgreens or.
Yeah.
She was screaming at somebody for a lighter.
Yeah.
Did you didn't get into the rookery then?
No.
I like
that. Well, we walked inside. It was really loud. It was really
loud. And it was totally full.
I'm like, we couldn't sit here and talk if we wanted to, but they were full anyway, so we left.
I make reservations for there, but you know, if you haven't gone to Salt, they're pretty good.
You were talking about that.
Yeah, they mentioned that one.
Right.
And there's another one that they mentioned. And if you said the name,
I can't
think of it.
I wonder if it's the one under... What's the name of that? The Rockwell? The Rockwell? I like their food, too.
No, it was...
Saffron?
It almost sounded like... not McGuire's, but...
McGinley's.
Oh, McGivney's.
McGivney's, that's it.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking, the bar next to my house. Yeah, their food is good. Yeah, it's a bar.
Where did we go last night?
Their food is good.
McGivney's is pretty good.
Their food is very good, but I don't know that I'd go there. I'd choose to go to... If I was going to go out to dinner, I'd choose to go to one of the other places, like Salt or
the Rookery
or the Rockwell, which is all right in that area. I hadn't heard, I didn't know about the Rockwell. It's been around a long time?
A couple years.
Yeah. Have you eaten there?
Not since it's been Rockwell. Before it was a...
Something else?
Yeah.
It's
like
new.
Mexican, yeah.
Oh, it was really good. I had a delicious steak there.
Yeah, I hear wonderful things about it, and the atmosphere is supposed to be nice.
It's
and
quiet, and yeah, sometimes they have.
How long are you guys here for?
Till tomorrow afternoon.
Oh,
you
got a lot to do. I know. We're like,
how many times
can we
eat?
Yeah.
That's what I do when I go to Anchorage, because I love the restaurants there. I'm like, oh, I can't eat anymore, but I have to.
What's the cowboy one?
Next to Olive Garden? Like Texas Roadhouse?
Yeah, Texas Roadhouse. They have a really good steak salad there.
Their steak salad, it's kind of like the one we had last night.
Yeah, that's
really
good.
That's what I'm like, I always eat steak salad.
We ended up at the hangar. Well, after we started seeing the, you know, I was like, let's get closer to the hotel so when we leave, because I knew it was going to get dark at some point, although it's still light.
I was at the hangar from 6:30 to almost 8 o'clock.
Oh, we were there.
And my boyfriend had a the KC steak salad.
That's what we
had. I love their steak salads.
I got the special, that gnocchi thing.
I couldn't think about that.
It was bad. It was one of the worst things I've ever eaten. I couldn't even eat it.
Wow.
But I have this salad.
We thought about it, and then I'm like, oh, with the salmon. I don't know. Sometimes salmon doesn't agree with me. Like
the salmon was good. The halibut in it was almost like I thought they were trying to get rid of some stuff that was turning or something.
Oh.
That bad. And after I got it, I had noticed another lady that had ordered it who left, and she was, I started laughing because she was doing the same thing that I ended up doing.
Picking the good part.
Yeah.
Geez, I was thinking about going there for lunch today. I guess she had dinner there. We won't, but the other place I was thinking about was Sandpiper. So if
yeah.
we get out of here and if we get it finished up in time.
Okay.
Yeah. Sandpiper. Yeah, I like Sandpiper.
The bread was really good there last
Sandpiper, time. That's the one up kind of by Breakwater?
Yep.
Up that way? Okay. Cool.
And that way, you know, I
go to the hangar again. That would not hurt our feelings either. Either.
Okay. Sandpiper has easier parking.
Yeah.
That's Susan's thing in life. Where's your parking and is it easy? I live downtown and I started boycotting downtown. I don't go downtown when a couple years ago they put in these parking meters. And they weren't like right along the street. They were these boxes that you had to walk up to and
corners.
Yeah. And to me, I mean, at the time I was using a walker and I'm like, yeah, you want me to park and then walk up a hill to find a parking meter to this is just not. Forget it. You don't need my business downtown. As simple as that. And I stopped going downtown.
Did they do away with it now, though?
They did. They're back to 2-hour free parking now. You get 2 hours a day on the street. After that, you got to move it into a garage or you get ticketed. Which I'm never any place for 2 hours. I mean,
I was coming down to get my hair done years ago downtown, and I got a parking ticket every single time. It took more than 2 hours to frost my hair. And I was so mad. I quit going to that place, too. I was like, I'm just not doing this.
Right.
So I'm going to go out there with foil over my head and move my car.
Not happening.
Sorry.
It's Alaska. It's like, really?
We don't need that.
You have to pay for parking? No.
Yes. It's like that downtown Anchorage, and it is expensive. It's very, especially if you park in the Captain Cook parking lot.
Yeah.
I was there for 5 hours, and it was $28.
Wow.
Yeah. I
that was for jury duty,
down there.
Too.
Really?
They gave me the free ticket.
Oh, yeah.
So I got called for jury duty, and you have to park in the specific parking space. And they'll give you a free voucher that you can turn in. And when you put your ticket in the machine, it automatically gives you the amount due. And then you put in this ticket that won't charge you. It was $28 for it. Well, I got there at 8 o'clock, and I left at 1:30, so 5.5 hours.
That's ridiculous.
$28. Can you imagine
that's
full
like
day?
Seattle. Yeah.
That's crazy.
So TJ McGuire's, is that in the Baranoff?
No, it's in the Prospector.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. That way. Got it.
And there's parking there.
Yes. That's good.
Usually. Last time I went there, Rex and I went for dinner, and there were two spaces, and somebody grabbed the last one.
You go under the building side and park underneath?
No, I ended up going over and parking over by the radio station and just walking up the hill.
Yeah, you know you can park underneath, and there's an elevator that takes you up.
No, I didn't know that.
Mm-mm. Yeah, actually, I don't know. I took the stairs. I think there's an elevator down there, but there are definitely stairs.
Yeah, I know there's stairs.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. Maybe there isn't an elevator.
I just grabbed the walker and took it up the hill, and we were fine.
Yeah.
I shattered my legs my last day in Fairbanks, and then I also have arthritis in two of my knees really bad.
Oh.
And I'm aspiring to get them replaced. Let's just leave it at that. It's been a long journey. So I use a walker if I have to go someplace for either where I have to stand for a long period of time or walk a great distance. Other than that, I don't use it, but yeah. In fact, this last weekend when I went to the fair, our clock in the hotel was wrong. We didn't know that. And we get out to the truck, and I turned to my friend, and I said, is your clock right? He goes, no, it's off by an hour. I said, it's up by an hour. That means their clock in our room wasn't right. We're supposed to be meeting somebody there at a particular time. So I'm on the cell phone calling, going, okay, we're on our way. Okay, we're circling the parking lot. Okay, we're at the shuttle bus. We couldn't find parking, you know. And we get there, and I said, well, just save us a seat. And they had to have been, I don't know, 10 steps or more up in these bleachers.
Oh.
And we go in, and my friend said to me, he goes, you're never going to make it up there.
Oh, yeah, just because you said that, I will.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
right.
Challenge accepted.
Watch me. We were sitting down up there, and I said, looks like a nice view from up here, huh? Yeah. I actually happened to luck out because they had a railing at the bottom for the first three stairs. Then the railing went away, but they actually had a wider platform,
mm-hmm.
which I've never seen before. And it was perfect because I'd just take the walker and I could
right up it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right up it and go on up. But yeah, he was like, I don't believe you. There's a way.
Where were you at?
The fair in Fairbanks.
Oh.
They had a rodeo.
Oh, so I heard, you know who's coming to your to the state fair up there? Jim Gaffigan. I don't know if you guys listen to comedy or not, but
I got the schedule. And
if you can go see him, you should, because he is one of my favorite people ever. He is hilarious.
Really?
Yes.
I think I have a friend that was going, and I'm like, oh, I wonder who that is. So
we're pretty excited at the office about Pat Benatar.
Oh, is Pat Benatar coming too?
Sunday.
No.
And so Three Doors Down will be there Thursday.
No. And we've got a country star coming too.
Is that
something Lee or something? I was reading the Alaska Airlines.
Yeah.
Thing. But Jim Gaffigan is hilarious.
Really? I'll have to go.
I think he's there on a Saturday night.
I can't even believe that he's a big comedian, you know. Like,
I'm surprised Jimmy didn't say something about that. He's into that kind of stuff.
Is he the one who lives with his wife and like five kids in a small apartment? And
I don't know, but he's the one that goes, Hot Pocket. And he's like, so what about those lean pockets now? Oh my gosh, he talks about food and it is so funny. He talks about Domino's. He goes, so you guys heard you can get one pizza for $15.99 or two for $5.99. They're trying to get you so fat you can't leave your house. Then you have to order delivery. It's called the Domino effect. I'm like, I mean, he is just, everything that comes out of his mouth is hilarious. And
that's funny.
Yeah, I'd love to see him. So
that's funny.
Yeah, I would like to go up to that.
They have a pretty good lineup this year.
I just went to Taylor Swift. I left early. I was like,
really?
Yeah, people were like, when my sister and I were leaving, the guards at the door, they're like, why are you leaving? Because it was completely sold out. I wish I would have sold those tickets. I could have sold them for $700 out front.
So was this in Washington?
Yeah, in Seattle.
A couple friends
got in Saturday.
Yeah, Jody went.
I saw she checked in there.
Yeah.
We had Motley Crue here a couple of weeks ago, so yeah.
Well, see, those are my Motley Crue, Pat Benatar, Rolling Stones, give me something.
It was an amazing, amazing concert. And I saw him twice this year. I saw him in October back in New York. I flew back for it, and then they announced they were coming to Anchorage because I was going to fly to Seattle to see them.
Yeah.
And then they announced Anchorage, and like we're all going nuts at work.
Yeah,
and we're like freaking out.
I wanted to see your outfit. Did she really cut up the T-shirt? And
we did.
I don't think I saw pictures.
I didn't post it, but I'll have to show you. we had a really good time, and I guess Duran Duran is coming to Seattle, so we've got people flying down for that. I'm like, that's my generation.
Yeah.
That would be
awesome.
I have to go to Garden City, Idaho, I'm thinking in October, for a weekend with my son, who's almost 16, to see something called 21 Pilots.
I've never heard of them.
I think it's techno music or something. I don't know.
Oh, cool.
But
that'll be fun, though.
I don't know.
Can you imagine what our parents are
thinking? I know. I know. It's sold out all the way across the world, though. Here's a band I've never heard of. I'm like, I know I'm getting older now because I've never heard of them, and my son keeps talking about them. So I look it up, and it's like Ukraine, Paris, and it's sold out, sold out, sold out. There's just tickets available in Idaho and Oakland, California.
Okay, because, you know, London, Paris, Idaho makes all kinds of sense,
yeah.
Right?
They're all across the world. And I'm like,
yeah,
I don't even know who they are.
Huh?
Well, it makes me feel like I need to get with the program here.
Well, I know I look back at some of these bands that we used to listen to, like, you know, on the Poison and Motley Crue and Kiss days, and I'm like, what in the world were they thinking, putting their hair like that?
I know.
And then the makeup. And like, if I was my mother, I would have been like, absolutely not. You are not listening to this kind of music.
It happens with every generation, though. I mean, you know, the music now, though, is not, it's, well, the stuff my son listens to is actually better than what I was listening to. I mean, I was like a huge Aussie fan. I went to Black Sabbath. That was my first concert. He listens to things that are actually, like, wholesome. You know, it's not, like, rap. He's not listening to Eminem. He's listening to, like, this techno stuff.
I think
he's
kind of phasing out, like, the whole rap scene is kind of, like, going away.
Oh,
well, this techno is what's in for teenagers.
Yeah.
And my daughter's 9. She's still all about the Taylor Swift and not Bieber. We don't listen to Bieber, but she'll, like,
like the whole Disney Channel girls and stuff like that. So.
Yeah.
my baby's almost 24. Yeah, I'm not sure what he's listening to. Every once in a while, he'll go, "Hey, listen to this," and that's like I get a little bit in. I'm like, "Okay, that's enough."
I know.
Yeah.
That's what Nick's always want to hear the song, Mom. He's got his phone like following me around the house. And like,
yeah, I like that.
I know, but I feel so fake. I'm trying to do something else, and he's like, "Listen, listen, listen." Put it on the big speakers and stop following me around your mouth.
So, since you guys are here, I have a couple questions.
Okay.
I get confused. There's so many vendors. Is Crowley, when somebody does not have an account with you yet, but they want to use you as their vendor, do you want them to obtain an account number prior to us issuing the grant, or are you the company that is okay with us sending it as a new? And
either,
you guys will assign
it when
you get the check.
Either way.
Yeah. Either way.
If we get a payment and we don't have an account, we'll set one up, and that's where your the notifications come in handy because they've got the mailing
address
and physical address
and
the phone number.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
That, and that's really all we need.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So either way, I mean, it saves a little bit of time when we actually get the check to not have to do that then, but it doesn't matter.
To not have to do it when you get the check. So
it's
nice if it's set up
ahead
of time.
It's nice if we know ahead of time.
Okay. Yeah. Well, sometimes people want to change their vendor, right? They turn in their receipts from somebody else and say, "I want to use Crowley."
Yeah.
So we typically try to have them get account numbers, but not all vendors. As a matter of fact, one vendor was telling us, and I can't recall who that is right now, that they did not want an account number set up prior. They wanted to get the check first because they said sometimes they'd set up the account numbers and then they wouldn't end up getting the check, and then they had these account numbers set up with no money on them. So,
Either way, we have over 30,000 customers in our system now. We have a lot. Probably not as many as NSTAR, but
but
we have a lot.
And I heard that with the DSM now, we can set up an account for a company instead of individuals.
That's what I've been told.
I'm thinking that we, with them, it is so convenient if we can email information. I don't.
We prefer it as well.
And we can't right now unless, and it was.
I did send out information in the vendor letter that went out, and if you look in the right-hand side of your packets, at the very back, there's a copy of that vendor letter. I did mention to them that if they were to get a DSM, that we could do that, and it did give the information as to how to get a DSM. So kind of left that. Nope, you have the correct letter. If you're going to have probably like fourth paragraph down underneath the folded August 31st, right? The other side of the folded.
Oh, Michelle. I'm like, right. It's Michelle.
Yeah.
So the benefit, if they can get set up with, instead of having to have all individual accounts just with their own one company account, and we could email them, it would save you guys time and us time.
Okay.
Right now, the ETs, if they have an expedite and they need to, you know, or they need to get account information or give you account information, they are left having to call because we can't send it out. But if you had that, then we'd be able to send back and forth.
We will get that.
Yep. Okay. And we'd also then be able to transfer the files for the survey via in CSV format and stuff. So, because the heating assistance program is part of the Department of Health and Social Services, we are subject to all the HIPAA rules and regulations. I'm not sure which clock is right. This clock is saying that we've been on this for an hour and 33 minutes, and that one's saying quarter of 10. If we start at 8:30, it should be 10 o'clock.
It's 9:48.
Okay. So we've got 12 more minutes to go. Thank you. Don't let me interrupt your question.
yeah. I don't know what other ones I have.
Yeah, I think I got hung up on the completing the vendor survey and didn't really hone in on the DSM thing. So that's good. We'll get that set up for sure.
So I did have a question too while we're here. I typically work more on the, with the highway division, and I get a lot of feedback from our terminals and from our customers regarding our tank rentals and propane usage. So it's very hard to decipher between who's using propane for what and how much they're supposed to be able to use of the grant money, and I know that, that's changed a few times. So how is that? I know that tank rentals are not being covered at all, and that they need to pay them out of pocket, which we have a really hard time collecting sometimes. And then as far as the propane, I remember it being, for some right reason, 59 gallons is sticking in my head.
We've said one tank can be used for cooking if they heat with oil.
Okay.
If they heat with propane, then, you know, the whole grant can go to propane. And I believe on our notice of action it does say what fuel was the primary fuel.
You know,
I think we had John add that.
I'm not positive.
And I'm looking at
Nicole. Were just talking about starting a binder of the approval notices as we get them and having copies and examples for the ETs to look at, because we don't see the notices that, you know, the ETs don't see them that go to the vendors. And Chris Harvey and I, before she left, did a, like, a little test, and I don't think the one that we got said
on it.
That.
Okay.
Yeah, so we should look at that.
Yeah, I was just wondering how that works, because it's basically on the honesty scale for the customer that's purchasing what they're heating with. I mean, if they tell us that they're heating with propane, then obviously we want to make sure that they have the fuel and can use the money that's been provided.
Yeah, when we go back to the office, we can look at one of the NOAs.
Yeah, that's the only circumstance where they can get a tank of propane.
And a tank is any quantity tank?
Right now, yes.
So if they have a 100-gallon propane tank or a 20-gallon propane tank,
it's one.
One tank.
Yeah.
Whatever your size is, you get at one time. I think we have 125, and then some of the businesses have 300.
All the businesses wouldn't be cooking
like
all
that. They wouldn't get energy assistance.
Yeah.
The businesses wouldn't.
Yeah.
Just trying to think of the different tank lines, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Where the initial for that.
And that's one of those things that, once again, we kind of need to hone on. There's a few things we need to hone down on, but right now, our everything says one tank of propane, and it doesn't give a size. So until we can get that honed down and hammered down and in writing, then we're going to honor any size.
I'm not sure where I got 59 gallons from. Was it at one time so that you could get 59 gallons per?
I'm not
gallons.
And I want to say that was coming from Jana out in Glen Allen. She's like, nope, state of Alaska said 59 gallons, and that's all I'm given.
No, it may have been prior to my coming. I've been here for 7 years. So anything that was said prior to that, I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
I can only tell you what I've seen in writing, and I haven't seen any.
I usually just go by it and say, but like, that's our main source of heating. We don't use anything else. You can see it on our account, and we can see what types of fuel they purchase.
But when
and if that's the case.
Both, it is, I mean, we would have to run reports. It would be difficult for us to know if they've already gotten their tank.
Tank propane.
Yeah.
Or not. And I guess,
you'd have to be looking back at going back to the date that you received the grant,
mm-hmm.
and you'd have to look at that whole history to
see
if the tank had already been filled.
I think it'd be easier if the terminals were just mindful of what they received. So when they're taking that order and they can look back at the previous.
But they still would have to.
Or, you know, if you want to make your own rule and say, you know, we're just not going to do propane for cooking, even though we say you can have up to one, I mean.
So whatever your primary source of heat is, that's what we'll use the energy assistance for. The other thing that happens is we have an annual tank rental, and it's somewhere between $30 and $60, depending on the location, and so people always want to use their energy assistance for that. And so then what would end up happening is they would pay, say, $60 in cash against their heating bill, and then think we end up with $60 left of energy assistance and still the $60 propane tank rental hanging out there, and we can't apply them. But of course, it's a net of zero, even though technically they owe for it, but they think they already paid for it because they paid for the propane. So it's from, you know, the statement shows a balance of zero. It's just these two things need to be offset, but
math,
we can't
but we
use
can't
the energy assistance to offset it.
Right. Yeah.
This is not really made. It's not really meant for equipment. It's meant to defray
heating
costs. So,
I know that some companies, vendors, will set up a separate account for their energy assistance grants.
Yeah, we don't want to.
Oh,
do
Lord,
that.
Have mercy.
So, and when it's gone, and then they
right.
cash account.
And then,
oh, yeah.
And then what happens is they get 300 gallons of heating oil, say, and they've got enough money for 200 gallons, and so now you've got this split billing thing, and
yeah. And then when you guys want to know how much, then we don't know because part of it would
pull
yeah.
two of them, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'd have to know which ones they are, and did I mention there's 30,000?
Yeah, we've been trying to get all the duplicates together for you.
Yeah.
And we've actually slimmed it down, and it looks
yeah.
really, really good now.
It looks like we get, you know, up towards 17,000 applications. So
yeah.
it's kind of the same thing when, you know, you think about it. It's like, oh, my gosh. And just recording all this usage information, that means since we're getting heating and electric, that's 34,000 entries
yeah.
to put into a system for
yeah.
that. So I understand completely
yeah.
what that's like, you know.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that, you know, we really front load our program, which is difficult for our staff. We pre-mail applications beginning in August to elderly, disabled, and families with young children, and then everyone else. And I put together the labels to get sent to the printer, and just our elderly and disabled, which is our first mailing, is 5,500 people. So if And they're usually pretty good about filling out their applications right away and sending them back.
Yeah.
So by the time staff comes back the beginning of September, we're already backlogged, which is so frustrating, but there really isn't any other way because we say we'll give priority to this group. And if we stagger it out too long, then we're already at the beginning of the season
for everybody else.
Yeah.
This year, our applications are going to be going out about a week late because of the new state accounting system. IRIS went in July 1st, and I wasn't allowed to do a purchase order until after July 1st, since it was 2016 funds. And come July 1st, nobody knew what they were doing with the system. So long story short, things got backed up, but we think that after the first, we're only going to be delayed a week, which won't be too bad. But
so the technicians are off from April, May? You said when they come back.
Right. So the eligibility technicians pretty much leave anywhere between April and May and come back at the beginning of September.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. We have a couple that are there. Nicole was an ET3. She's now the eligibility office manager. So she was year-round. Sharon Zuboff, who's an ET2, she works other programs as well as ours, is year-round. Melinda, is that her name, Melinda?
Mm-hmm.
Is your own. I'm really bad because I'm nothing out there. Sometimes they get, like, new staff, and I go out to, like, a luncheon or something, and I'm like,
who are these people?
Yeah, it's kind of sad.
Me, Melinda, Debbie, and Trina
And Trina,
yeah.
I talk to Trina a lot.
Yeah.
We'll email back and forth.
And Carlisa is year-round,
I
think.
Oh, yeah, Carlisa.
Yeah.
I think I talked to her.
And she got married. I don't know when she's going to switch to her new name, but.
Yeah, she's having a baby, too.
Lumba.
Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. I didn't know that was public information yet, though.
She put it on Facebook.
Oh, she did? Well, then it's definitely
out now. I was like, by the way.
Melinda's having a baby as well. Did you know that?
No.
She's due on Labor Day.
Oh, it's Labor Day?
Yeah. Yeah, no one knew. Trina came upstairs the other day, and we always said, we should, like, get her a present or something. And Trina's like, why? I'm like, well, she's pregnant. She goes, what?
Oh, well, if you do a little baby shower,
Lisa,
let me know.
No one knew, and she's been pregnant for 9 months there.
Oh, my goodness.
She didn't talk about it.
Well, she's a little chunky to begin with, so you
yeah.
wouldn't.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's lost weight her entire pregnancy. She's still working out. Yeah.
Wow.
Good for her.
Yeah. But I had a coworker who did that when I was up in Fairbanks.
she wore hoodies the whole time. And she just always walked around with her hands in her pocket. And it wasn't until like 2 weeks before she gave birth that people knew that she was pregnant.
I asked her why. At first she didn't want people to know. And I asked her why. And she said, well, it's my seventh child. And she said, and sometimes when you tell people that you're pregnant and they already know you have six children, they're like, don't you think you have enough? And she said that there's this prejudice.
That's rude.
So she decided after like her fourth child that she would just not say anything because she didn't want to hear people. Yeah,
because that was child. Oh, I wish I'd known sooner. I have this thing. I make people baby blankets.
Oh.
And if I know,
crocheter.
And so right now I've got three. Carlisa, because I knew about Carlisa. She doesn't know she's getting a blanket. Michael from Michigan, who's on my performance measures thing. And I just found out the other day one of the guys at AVCP, his wife's having a baby. So that's three. I don't think I can whip one out before Memorial Day for Melinda, but now that makes me feel bad because you know, Carlisa's going to get one, and
you're making a baby blanket for who'd you say, the guy, the Fed or the
one of the Fed
performance measures?
Yeah.
Are you like really gonna? You're warming up
him up. Well, what I did was actually the guy who runs it. His son had a child, and you know I don't usually do it for guys, but. I had done it for Dave, and I said, this is your grandpa blanket, and I made it bigger so that him and baby could sleep wrapped up together. But Michael was at our meeting in Minnesota, and he was just so excited. This is their first child, and I'm like, okay, I've got to make the baby blanket.
Uh-huh. So. I always love the handmade ones. When I had my two children, I got a couple, and I saved them. So I should really let them use them, but I wanted to make sure that they stayed nice. So I put them in there. I have, like, the little bins, you know,
glass
you keep so many. Yeah. No, I didn't do the shadow boxes, and it's on my bucket list to make a shadow box for each of my children. But, you know.
On the emergency pledges, so we're looking at doing the same thing that we did last year, that if it's an emergency, you guys will fax us.
Yeah, if we have all this email stuff set up, we could probably email that.
That would be
better. It would be easier for the ETs because you have to print it.
Yes.
Okay,
right. So we'll get a specific, because unless you guys say it's emergency, we'll wait, like in the case with K&A, they sent us an email saying this is an emergency pledge for blah, and then they never sent the money. And now they're closed. So normally we do not let the people purchase against a regular funding unless you guys say it's an emergency.
It's an emergency.
And then we have a
any time that we fax you one of those pledge sheets, we would never be sending that if it wasn't that they were out of fuel, therefore considered an expedite/emergency cancellation. And so anytime that those go out, but it would be much better if we could just send it and name it, you know, pledge, emergency, or expedite.
They come through right on the fax machine that sits behind me, and I check, and as soon as I hear it ring, it's just normal nature for me to turn around and grab what's coming through.
You know, the system will generate an email now. Did we talk about that? But it just does a PDF, and it's sitting out there, so I suppose, I thought that John was saying that if we were going to email it and have them set up when it's an expedite to send an email, that the system would actually send it out of HAS. But I'm thinking that was never the intention, that maybe the intention was to generate a PDF that we could then attach to an email and send to them. But in that, I'm just curious because, I mean, really, we don't even need that. If we have a DSM set up, we don't even need that. We can just type it in there, you know, really easy.
DSM would be the priority, would be the preference.
Yeah.
I'll have to check with John on the other.
Yeah.
John,
I mean, it's like
John, John's in recovery right now. He had some surgery, so.
Yeah. But we have that option. We could attach the actual pledge letter to the email if you had DSM set up, and we could send it that way or just type it in there.
So the I'll get that set up while we're here, or I'll try to get that set up while we're here, and we can – I'm just thinking on our end, then can it go to multiple people or
– That was in the beginning, DSM, they wanted each individual that worked for an agency to have their own credentials, and a lot of people didn't like that. They're like, I'm an employee, I don't want to put my own personal information in there, and it was too cumbersome, but my understanding now is that you could have a general email.
One for
your, that comes into chance, just to you guys. But you can still set it up all your individual emails as well. Right. That would mean that we would have to figure out who we were going to send the email to.
Okay. I'll have to think about that. We have a shared email address that we normally, like, for remittance and all of
right.
that, that we have, and it's checked. Everybody has access
right.
to it, and they get in that way. You know, you send it to me and I'm on vacation or something, then it might not get open.
So I think you can use that one now, whereas before it couldn't be a Jen Eric one, but now.
Okay. Or we can set up a rule. If it has to be an individual, we can set up a rule to
forward
it to that or whatever. So on the emergency ones, what we've been doing is printing those out, and we have an alphabetical thing that we keep them in. So when we actually do get the funding, then we pull them back out. So it's constantly
right.
And if we end up with newer money before we have older money, then we know. And there was a couple like that that happened last year that were like, okay, wait, we're missing something.
Mm-hmm.
So it was good because I was able to get with Trina right away and go, hey, something happened here. And sure enough, something had gotten stuck in the system and somebody didn't push an extra button or something, so the check never generated.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I think that worked well instead of waiting till the end of the year and going, oh, wait, we didn't get this. So,
right.
Okay, it's now 10 o'clock, and it's time for our public hearing to close. One last opportunity, if there's anyone on the phone that would like to say anything, speak now. Okay, with that, we will close our public hearing, and for the PAC members who are on the phone, we will reconvene at 10:30 at the other telephone number on your agenda. And those of us here in the room, which is Nicole and myself from the state, and Carol Jackson and Michelle
Lindsay
from Crawley, will be leaving and heading over to the state offices to attend the PAC meeting. Thank you very much, and have a lovely day. This concludes the hearing.
Where are we going?
State building.
Or did you guys walk?
Nope.
You can ride with me if you'd like.
Is it a way?
No. It's not far. I don't know how to shut this off, though.
There you go.
So.